Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there. I could do this.
Let's take a ride. Find your wild side. Real stories. See with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears. I was like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoy the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going. What's going on, guys? Today's episode is brought to you by the fine folks at Blokes. Blokes is a men's health company that specializes in hormone health, weight loss, sexual health, longevity, all those sorts of things where you feel like something might be a little bit off. Blokes is here to help. They provide labs and blood work. They can help you test your testosterone levels or different biomarkers so that you can be at your best and show up as the ultimate version of yourself. They provide one-on-one health coaching and the ability to meet with a board-certified doctor in order to correct those things that might be going wrong in your body. If you want to get some blood work done, get your labs done, go ahead and go to blokes.co or check the show notes for more info. Once again, that's blokes.co. Also, get blokes on Instagram. Thank you guys so much. Let's do the show.
Does it sound good? I do have my mic set up here.
Yeah, it sounds really nice.
Sweet. Sometimes I find with Riverside to like not plug my mic in actually works better. It's almost, I don't know why, but yeah, we can, if this sounds good, we can just keep going.
Sweet, yeah.
Or I can plug my mic in and record my side to where it's like crispy.
Well, listen, man, whatever you think, because you are the podcast wizard. I am very new to this game compared to you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you've got a podcast. I mean, how long has the Adventure Sports podcast been going?
Oh, gosh, 8 years? 8 years?
Wow. So, I mean, probably one of the first, like, in the adventure sports realm, right? One of the first podcasts that made a name there.
I think so, actually. You know, it's funny. I've actually never really looked it up. I wasn't the original host here.
Hmm.
You tell me if... Oh, we're recording now, aren't we? Okay.
Yeah, we're good. We're good.
Yeah, I wasn't the original host for this show. I was a guest, and I ended up, like, taking over, like, probably episode... What was it? They were probably 3 years in. So I've been doing it for the most of the time, 5 years almost now. So, yeah, it was, they had to be one of the early ones, but I wasn't like around any, because 3 years difference with a medium like podcast can be a huge difference. You can, sure, be like early or kind of right in the middle of the, everyone starting their own show. So yeah, I have benefited from kind of this seed being planted a few years earlier. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Enormacast on the climbing podcast was going Dirtbag. Probably the earliest is Dirtbag Diaries.
Hmm.
Do you know that show?
No, I don't know it.
It's a big outdoor show with Fitz Cahill. Cahill. It's like Patagonia's show. Duct Tape Then Beer is the production company. They've been going for like 15 years. They've been around a long time.
Wow.
They're the OGs. I was like racking my brain. I'm like, I know someone's been here a lot longer. But yeah, a lot of us did get started right around that time. But yeah, we were definitely one of the earlier ones.
Very cool. What an interesting story it is to like be a host, or no, be a guest, and then kind of become the host of that same podcast. Like, that's so unique.
Yeah, man, it's, you know, I was a guest because I used to ride my bike really far, and they had me on the show, and I could just, gosh, it wasn't that first time. I was a guest twice, and the second time, no offense to the host, he'll love this story because we're still friends. I could just tell he was a little burned out or just was like going through something. And I just didn't sense that same energy. And so I was like, hey, man, if you ever need help, just let me know. And I didn't hear from him for like a month. And I was like, oh, man, I hope I didn't offend him or something. And then like a month later, he's like, you know what, man, you were spot on. We'd love to. It was two guys hosting at the time, but one kind of became kind of 90% of the time he was the host. And he's like, both Travis and I are just kind of ready to move on and do our own adventures. Like, this show has inspired us to want to go out and kind of change our lives and take our families with us. But that would mean not hosting the show anymore.
Sure.
So we kind of need somebody to take over. So they kind of offered it to me. They sold it to me. I had to buy it from them. Mm. They offered a deal, though, and they offered training. So they reinvented the wheel. Or they kept me from reinventing the wheel by training me on how to run a show and letting me practice edit, practice publishing, practice all that. And it was huge. It was like 6-8 weeks of just like training, and it was a really flawless transition, and the show's grown ever since. It was growing then, but it's been growing continually since. So
that's amazing.
I haven't met anybody else in your mind that.
Was that in your mind, like, I want to become a podcast host before that?
Never. I was introduced to podcasts by my good friend Andrew Vinson, who came out to I was living in Colorado. He flew out to Colorado. No, I'm sorry. He drove across the country in an RV with his wife and his, like, newborn. And I was painting houses at the time and running this backpacking company with a friend. And so my summertime job was doing this backpack guiding. And in the winters, I was like painting houses in Denver. And he came out, he was also had painted houses. So we did that together. And he's like, dude, do you listen to podcasts? And I'm like, no, not never. And this was probably, gosh, 2015, 2016. And he's like, let's listen to this show called Stuff You Should Know. And we listened to this episode about vultures. And I was like, what is this? These two dudes are just talking, like, you know, just very, very casual conversation about vultures. And it was like they were reading off the Wikipedia page of vultures. I'm like, what is this? But I immediately got, I don't know if you know the show Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't listened in a while, but I used to love that show. I used to go see them in person, like see them live. It was just like, that. It's a big show, and they've got just a unique style. And I fell in love, and I just was like listening all the time, like, what else is out there? It's kind of like when YouTube came about, and it was just like, holy cow, this opens up a world. And now YouTube is a whole universe. Like, it's a universe unto itself. And podcasting was kind of, it's still getting to that point. It's not there yet, but it's definitely like, people are so creative. There's so much happening. And my favorite thing about it was I could work and consume this stuff and leave by the end of the day and be smarter. Learning about vultures, like, it was, there's stuff about vultures I still talk about that I learned on that episode. And I'm not like the crazy over efficient person, but I do like when I can kill two birds with one stone. Or
sure,
I usually say when I can kill like two dogs with one car. I always mix up the animals being killed and the method to just throw people off. So that's something I always try to do when using that analogy. Anyway, that's a total side story. So I just fell in love with podcasts right then and there. And so I was listening for a couple years. Never had the intention to take over a show, though, until that opportunity.
Sweet. Killing two birds with one car.
There you go, baby. Yeah, it's pretty freaking morbid. But
that's sweet, man. So I guess for anybody listening that doesn't know, you host a show called the Adventure Sports Podcast. And that was actually how I came across you first. Before I even had heard of your adventures, I had a friend, we were on a backpacking trip, and he was like, he knew that I had a podcast, and we were talking about guests, and he's like, oh, have you ever heard of Mason? I'm like, no. He's like, well, he's got this thing called the Adventure Sports Podcast, and it's literally only about, not only, but primarily about people doing really big, crazy wilderness trips. And that's always been something I've been deeply interested in, but not something that I knew there was such a massive spider web of other folks that were interested into it. And then once I came across your podcast, I'm like, oh, wow, this is much bigger in terms of magnitude than I expected. Like, the guests that you have on there are incredible. And I personally just want to say that I'm a huge fan of the show. So thank you for for giving all those people a great platform to share all these crazy stories.
Ryan, thank you so much for the kind words. And I don't know if you told your friend's name, but tell them thank you so much for recommending. Shout out to Chris. Shout out to Chris. Thank you, Chris. But that is absolutely how the show has grown. I had a background where I did a couple big adventures, and just when I first came up with the idea to do some of my big trips, I thought it was a novel idea. Same thing. I was like, has anybody ever done this? And little did I know there was a whole underworld of people and communities focused on this stuff. And that's what I've learned about anything. You think you're alone oftentimes in your ideas and thoughts. And I hear a lot of guests talk about that too. Like, I'm the only person in my family that wants to, you know, through hike the Colorado Trail or sail around the world in a sailboat. And I feel like such an outsider and such an idiot sometimes, because people just don't understand this desire. And I found your show, and I love knowing there's other crazy people out there that do these things and do them well and don't feel guilty about it and spend their lives doing this. Just, gosh, man, 2 hours before I talked to you, I was on the phone, or I was on a call doing a interview with this lady who spent 95 days sailing around the world by herself in a sailboat, literally around the entire world, 26,000 miles.
Holy crap. And
she's only the 8th woman to ever do it. And wow. I this was like last year, and we're talking, and the way she's talking about why she loves it and going through storms and like repairing rudders in the middle of the ocean and all the just chaos that ensues and not being able to sleep more than 30 minutes because, you know, your boat's never not moving. It's always moving in the water. And it's just like, that is a crazy way to live your life. And but when you hear them tell their stories, it's just so powerful. I've gotten not addicted to it, but it's a huge joy to talk to people who set their mind to do something really crazy and then do it. But are also just not famous. They're just like everyday people, you know. Yeah. That's the beauty of it. I love talking to people who no one's ever talked to on a podcast.
Right.
But I also, you know, love having the big guests. I mean, just a couple of days ago, I had Bear Grylls on the show. Kind of like the biggest adventurer of our generation. You know, I don't know if you know who that is, but huge name.
Yeah.
So we kind of have a range of crazy professional athletes all the way down to you just people making the most of their weekend. And I love talking to all of them.
Yeah, you gotta love those stories that are just like bootstrapped adventures, just super gritty, like very little prerequisite information. I don't know. I have a soft spot. I guess that's because that's kind of what I relate to is in my adventures. I feel like I'm typically underprepared. I have no reason to be the one attempting this or that. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a more relatable feeling. And I love hearing those stories of people like the one you're talking about sailing 26,000 miles. Like, you just got to be gritty at that point.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you a crazy thing that she told me that I've heard other sailors tell me that when you're doing that experience, here's one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever heard was when you're sailing around the world in the Southern Ocean, so between, you know, New Zealand and South America, kind of right in the middle, there's this point called Point Nemo, and you're about 1,600 miles from any point on land. And the closest human beings, a lot of times in that part of the ocean, the closest human beings to you are the astronauts in the space station that fly overhead.
Whoa.
that's the closest people and the closest life, a human life, that is to you. It is the little dot going across the sky at night in the International Space Station. Isn't that crazy? Like by a long shot, what? That's the closest person to you.
What?
Because you might have a boat 1,000 miles away from you.
I'm like looking at this globe right here. Like, that is just mind blowing.
Yeah. But I think the International Space Station, elevation, or like, yeah, 250 miles away. So, you know, even though it's, you feel like it's way out in space, it's way closer to you than the closest, like, the closest boat.
Yeah, that's not, and it's not even remotely close. It's like 8 times closer.
Yeah, yeah, it's way closer.
Wow, that is remarkable. I'm gonna have to think about that more.
So there's like all kinds of stuff you learn talking to these people like that, and things that they don't even know they're gonna learn on the experiences. And so, like I said, I've been doing that. You know, what's funny is this podcast has opened up so many doors. I love the unexpected and just spontaneity and just not knowing what tomorrow brings, which kind of is like the whole thrill of life. Gosh, one day I heard from a listener who was a big fan, and that led to what I do now as my day job. Like, this is not my job. I do this nights and weekends, but I got a job through the podcast. I've got friends through the podcast. I've had opportunities to go on trips through this show. And so it's just it's like a treasured box, never knowing what you're going to get, never knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. But the more you talk to these people, the more you give a platform for folks to listen and hear these stories and be inspired, just the more cool things just keep happening. So that's a big reason I just keep doing it.
It's incredible. And I think it's also a spot, at least in my opinion, where social media, I guess, at large, feels more authentic, because it's literally just a conversation between two people, and there's very little, I mean, at least in my podcast, very little shaping or formulating or planning of how this is going to look to the end viewer. It's simply just a conversation of me with somebody I think is interesting. So I don't know, I really appreciate how authentic podcasting specifically is.
Yeah, it's there's not a lot of mediums in today's world where you talk to somebody for an hour or however long. If you're Joe Rogan, it's 3 hours, to where it's like people stay engaged with you that long. So much of, especially social media, and I'm caught up in that. You know what I mean? Watching clips that are 5 seconds, 10 seconds, and just like moving on, doom scrolling through just one thing after another. And it's like the people that get really popular on those platforms, it's like, I don't feel like they ever really get known, because people only know them through these little skits that are 10 seconds or whatever. And I'm just like, man, I love this format of podcasting, because I can like, what other place can you dive into a conversation, like a heartfelt conversation with another person for this long, a complete stranger too? Like, we've never met before this. And then you just send it out to the world. It's really unique, especially today. Yeah. So I love it. And you don't have to watch a screen while you do this. I think that was, like I said before, that was one reason I love this. It's like, I don't have to look at a screen to consume this high-end quality content. I've had plenty of people reach out over the years and say, this, like, listening to these shows and they'll say my podcast or just the world of podcasting, it's as good as like a well-made podcast is to me, is as enjoyable and beautiful as like a well-made movie, and obviously way less expensive. And it's crazy that just audio can do that. And it's really all about the quality of the conversation or quality of the story that's being told. If it's more of like a docuseries or like a journalistic investigation, you know, whatever it is. I love all kinds of podcasts, but it's like, I can drive, I can do the dishes, I can cook dinner, I can you know, live the lifestyle I want and still, you know, consume high quality content. That's one reason I think the world of podcasting still has a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think in terms
a lot of growth, a lot of runway.
Yeah, I think in terms of like impact, you think about pieces of media that have like changed the way you think. I think if I was going to list off a top five, probably three of those would be single podcast episodes that have had the biggest impact on my life versus movies or, I mean, there's certainly not any 30-second videos that would make that list. Like, podcasts really seem to be what helped me change my mind about topics and also inspire me to do things that I love. So I think it's a great medium for that. And I think, I mean, you are well suited to talk to these folks. I guess we've been talking about podcasting, but you yourself have completed some wild, crazy adventures. So I think one place we could start would be, how did you end up doing this? Were you a kid that was always trying to plan big adventures, or did you just kind of stumble into this?
I grew up in Central Florida, and yeah, just kind of grew up in the orange groves and out in, like, when you get away from the coast in Florida, it's a lot of cattle ranches and agriculture. Citrus is obviously big in Florida, but also just like big wide open ranches. People don't think that, but it's like one of the top 10 beef producing states in the country. I think 10 of the 25 largest cattle ranches in the U.S. are in Florida, which is crazy to people. They're like, it has to be Texas, but no, tons of cows come from Florida that go to Texas. Anyway, that's kind of the setting. And so it was very outdoorsy, mostly hunting, fishing. But, you know, God bless my dad, we weren't that great at hunting or fishing. So there was like a time in college where I was like, I'm not going to bring all this tackle, bring all these fishing poles and all this stuff with me. I'm just going to go for a walk out in the woods so I don't come back feeling like I didn't achieve what I set it out to do. And it was a blessing in disguise, because I was like, you know what? All those years I sat in a deer stand not seeing anything, I fell in love with like the outdoors and kind of the just watching the world silently. I was like, nature. I really fell in love with nature just watching it from a deer stand and being unsuccessful. Now, we did, you know, harvest some things, but it was, you know, I could see how that would have maybe been the focus if we would have been better at it. But and I tell my dad that now and he just thinks it's funny, but that was probably a big reason why I just stopped doing those things, was just like, it's too much work. I'm just going to go out there and hike, and realize that did it for me. That was enough. And then started getting into biking and, not really getting into biking, but got into biking through an idea I had. So, where kind of this whole thing kicked off for me was in college. I was playing basketball. My roommate at the time, we were quickly becoming like best friends, and he was graduating and I wanted to do something with him, something, you know, crazy. He was like, you know, maybe to celebrate his graduation, I still had a couple years left, let's, you know, through hike the Appalachian Trail or something. And I was like, well, we got to do something in a summer because I got to go back to school. And his girlfriend was graduating college at the end of the summer as a nursing degree. So he had to be back in like late July.
Don't miss that one.
Can't miss that. They're married now. They've been married like 10 years. So, you know, if he would have missed it, maybe fate would have been a totally different direction for him. So, you know, we get the idea. We've got a world map on our wall. I got it for like $1 at a yard sale. It's an old map. Like, it's still, Russia's still USSR. And, you know, it's falling apart. But we're college kids living in, God, just a crap shoot of an apartment. And he's like, you know, where's the farthest we could go? We're all doing this like before class one day. We're like, where's the farthest we can go when school gets out and get back home before school gets back in? And I was like, well, we could probably go faster on bicycles than we could walking. And it's like, yeah, let's, and we wouldn't have to carry everything on our back. And I'm like, yeah, we were like, that's a great idea. Where should we go? He's like, do you think we could make it back to Florida from Alaska? And I was like, how far is that? And this is before we had smartphones. This was, well, smartphones existed. We were just poor college students, so we couldn't afford them. This was like 2011. So the iPhone had been out and all that, but I had my computer. I looked it up. I'm like, dude, that's like 5,000, 6,000 miles. And, we're like, all right, you do the math. We got 3 months, you know, we can do it. So we decided right then and there, we were going to fly one way to Alaska, get bikes, and then ride them all the way back home to Florida. And, gosh, 6 months later, we were on a flight 2 days after school got out, and with bikes that we just got like a week before, had done one practice ride on them, and we're biking back to Florida. So that's how it all started.
Wow, what a, I mean, the whole like baby steps thing. You guys kind of just said fuck that, like we're just gonna.
Yes, we definitely
we're
did.
Just gonna we go were for
like,
it.
And I tell people that. I'm like, you know, a lot of people, especially like, I was just talking yesterday to a guy that was an ultra runner. And I think, what was his, he was like, you know, it was baby steps leading up to doing like 250-mile ultra runs. And he's like, but my friend went straight to that. And I was like, you know what? I recommend that for certain people because, like, sometimes you just need that crazy goal to kind of get you moving, and then you kind of backtrack. So I went the opposite. I went that way, then backtracked. My wife, on the other hand, is like goes the other way. You know, builds over time, and everybody's different. You kind of figure out one of those or a hybrid works for you. I like doing that. Go all the way, and then I can do those shorter rides and those weekend trips and enjoy them. The one downside is those big adventures, especially when they go well, it does kind of spoil you because you're like, oh man, nothing compares. But you do, as you get older, learn. Now, my longest trips are like 3 days at the most. But I enjoy them immensely because it's like taking a little cross section of that long trip and just plopping it right here. And the good news is I can do those a lot more frequently than, you know, a 60-day trip that I used to do. Those come, you know, once a decade maybe now, or once every 5 years. Now I can do a weekend trip almost every month. And so by the end of the year, I've almost done the same amount of adventure, just split into pieces, if that makes sense. But it also isn't detrimental to my kids or detrimental to my job or, you know, to my family or anything like that. So, yeah, man, that's how I got started. And that was 2011. So what is that, you know, 12 years ago?
Sweet. And I'm curious for that trip. What was the sleeping setup? So I guess you guys probably were pretty new to the world of bike packing, which I feel like in the last 10 years has kind of exploded into its own medium. But
oh yeah,
were you guys just cowboy camping? Did you go with like a tent setup, tarp? What was the thought behind that?
I'll tell you this, we spent less than $1,000 each on that 66-day trip, including the plane tickets.
Wow.
And in prep, we probably spent a couple hundred bucks each. And yes, we had a tent, two-person tent, an Alps Mountaineering, two-person, I think, Lynx or something. It was $100 from a yard sale, from like a gear swap, you know, shop and swap, whatever, that was in Orlando before we left. We bought it. We haggled this guy for like a week because we didn't buy it right then and there. We tried to get it afterwards, and it was just, he was probably thinking, dude, it's a tent. Just buy it or don't buy it. Like, what is the deal? So we tried to talk him down. I mean, every dollar mattered at that time. We were so broke. I can't stress that enough. Like, it was like, can I afford one Snickers bar on the trip this is, or two? Can I get two? Or can I get one? And so we lived on like $4 or $5 a day, but the sleeping setup was the tent. We didn't have sleeping pads. We didn't really know about them. And so I didn't have one. He had like a cheap one. And then I bought I didn't know anything about sleeping bags. Our warm weather gear was, or our cold weather gear was our basketball warm-ups from the team. Like I said, we both played on a team. Mine actually were my high school basketball warm-ups, which are, you know, absolutely not going to keep you warm, even the slightest. Or water. They're like, you know, I don't even know what they're made out of, but it isn't mesh. Anything that's quality. Yeah, right. It's terrible. And one of my jacket got stolen somewhere. I don't even know where. We were like at like a hot spring, and I took it off, and then it was gone. And I had a $20 sleeping bag from Amazon that was basically as good as like a bed sheet folded over a couple times. I mean, it was absolutely useless. It was $20. And that first night I had a Camelback. Somebody gave me like a Camelback hydration pack to take, just to hold water in. A lot of bike packers don't have back. You know, like I said, we didn't know anything. Didn't even know how to change a flat tire. And that first night I used the Camelback as a pillow, didn't close the mouthpiece or lock it. And it just leaked all over the bottom of the tent all night. And it was like 15 degrees that night. So it froze solid. So the bottom of our tent is frozen. My sleeping bag is frozen on the bottom. I have no water. It's snowing. It snowed for a month. Like, it snowed every other day until June, until we got to Montana. And I mean, it was absolutely miserable for that first couple weeks. Then we hit Banff or Jasper National Park in Canada and came down and just, when we hit that area, the Canadian Rockies, like I'm not kidding. Like I'm blown away how little research we did. Like, I didn't even know the Canadian Rockies were as big and marvelous and beautiful as they were. And it just took us by complete surprise. Someone recommended you have to go on the Icefield Parkway, which is between Jasper and Banff. It's like the most beautiful scenery in the world. And I mean, coming from Florida, where there's literally no mountains or anything, it rocked my world to its core, just how stunning. And one of the beautiful things that people experience when you go through a landscape on your own 2 feet or by your own power or rafting or whatever it is, outside of a car and in a slower setting, you just don't miss anything. You see everything. You watch a mountain for like 2 hours as you pass it. You see things coming in the distance really slowly. You smell everything. You feel every change in temperature. You really feel a part of the landscape. And that's probably the best thing about it. So that everything's so much more vivid and vibrant and bright and beautiful. I've gone places on a bike that are just like, I'm in tears, it's so pretty. I go back, you know, 2 years later in a truck or in my car, and it's just, it's beautiful, but it doesn't have that same, it's like the vibrance, and it's almost like Photoshop to not look as great. And I think it's because when you work for something, and this is anything in life, it's so much more satisfying and beautiful. And that, I know through hikers experience the same thing, and backpackers, you know. Cause I've done that too, but, yeah, man, so to answer your question in the longest way possible, that was our sleep setup, and we camped 55 of the 66 nights, because the other 10 nights, so I think we got a hotel twice. And then the other nights people invited us into their homes and we camped, you know, or we stayed with people we met along the way.
Set up your tent in their living room.
You know what's funny is camping. I actually did. Someone invited us into their garage one time, and Paul was like, "All right, I'm going to run to the store." This was in Belfouche, South Dakota, and he came back, and I'm like, "You know what? I'm going to go ahead and get the tent set up and everything." And I set up the tent, and I put the sleeping stuff in it. And he comes back, and he's like, "Why the hell did you set up the tent? We're in a garage." And it didn't even hit me. Like, I didn't even think about that. I was like, that was the dumbest use of my time. And so, yeah, I actually did set up a tent inside at some point.
Were there any, like, moments between you two? I mean, that one sounds like a pretty funny one. But were there any moments between you two that there was, like, friction or beef or, like, somebody did something stupid that cost you a day of travel or?
Yeah. So my very good friend, my best friend, Paul, and I have done a lot of these trips together, especially that first one. It was, and he was kind of a coarse person back then. He still can be, no offense, Paul, but he can be, but back then especially. So I was a stronger rider at first, and then he kind of caught up to me as his legs kind of got underneath him. Then he was a much stronger rider towards the end. So he'd get like an hour ahead of me or 2 hours ahead of me on these trips over the course of a day. And so I'm just like, I'll see you tonight. So a lot of that trip has been alone, and I think I probably frustrated him a little then. But it was one night in Canada. We're on the Alaskan Highway somewhere, and we're eating a ton of peanut butter and jellies. Like I said, we're on a budget. And everything in Canada was way more expensive than we thought. Like a jar of jelly, a jar of peanut butter, and a loaf of bread was like $25 US. Like, it was steep. And like McDonald's didn't have a dollar menu at that time. It was like the $5 menu. It was way more expensive than we anticipated. So we were trying to be as frugal as possible. And one night we had got in, it was snowing. It was freezing cold, obviously. And we get in the tent. I've figured out how to kind of stay warm. It's like, put all your clothes on and get in the sleeping bag and like just try to cover my feet. Got so cold every night. Anyway, we're sitting in the sleeping bag or in the tent, and we're going to make dinner. And we're making dinner inside our tent in grizzly bear country, which is so stupid. Again, man, we knew nothing. And we did have grizzlies come up to our tent pretty regularly. Scared the crap out of us. That was probably the most scared I've ever been. All those nights that literally grizzlies would come right to our tent and sniff us and scratch at the tent and whatnot. And so we're making peanut butter jellies inside the tent. And I'm like, dude, I forgot my spork, because we both had like a dedicated spork. I said, I forgot it on the bike. Can I borrow yours? And he's like, no. I'm like, Paul, I really don't want to go out in the snow. Can I just borrow your spork? And he's like, fine, but don't lick it. Like, don't put it in your mouth. And so I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'll just wipe it off, like wipe the peanut butter off so I can get the jelly and whatnot. So I'm making my sandwich, and then I go to open the jar of jelly, and I was like, I need a hand. So I, without even thinking, I put it in my mouth. And he looks over at me, and he snatches it out of my mouth and slaps me across the face with it. And I like try to elbow him right in the cheek. And we like grab each other, and we're tussling like in the tent, like cussing at each other. And like, he's a strong dude. Like, he would have got overpowered me, but we were just like pushing each other and kind of letting some frustration out. And then it just kind of like simmered down and just died off. It was not much. It was hilarious though. And I was so mad. I wanted to kick him in his teeth. And he was obviously mad at me, and we just kind of stopped and went back to what we were doing and just didn't say anything the rest of the night. It was pretty funny.
Wow.
That was probably the one night that it got to that point. And that's the only time he and I have ever like confronted, you know, had that kind of conflict. So
you guys still talk about it? Like, yo, you remember that time?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We talk pretty often. What's funny is, sorry, just making sure I'm gonna get bothered. I've got some work going on, what's funny is, like, I was living in Colorado. Our podcast, Adventure Sports Podcast, was born in Colorado, and I took it over out there. And then when I decided to move back to Florida a couple years ago, he was living in Salt Lake City, and my other good friend Jordan, who's kind of like the third amigo of these bike trips, was living in Seattle. We're all from Florida. We all knew each other from college there. And within like a month, I was like, we got to move back. This was during the pandemic. And lo and behold, both of them moved back. We're moving back too, like decided they were coming back. And so the three of us like all moved back to Florida in like a week span, within an hour of each other. And we're like, as soon as we got, we were like, we have to make sure we all have kids, like two kids each. I'm like, we have to make sure we do things together. So what we committed to when we moved back was that every 8 weeks we'd get together and do a full weekend trip. So like, we'd go drive somewhere on a Friday night, camp the night before, wake up Saturday, do something all day, like a river or paddle or a hike or bikepacking or something. Go to bed Saturday, wake up Sunday and finish, and then come home in time to, you know, get ready for the next week and help with the families. And we've been doing that since we moved back almost 3 years ago. And now those trips have grown, and we've invited more people. They're totally free, and just, you know, we plan them like 8 weeks ahead of time. Now we've got like 30 people going on each of those trips. So it's usually the three of us and, you know, 10 to 30 of our closest friends, which is pretty cool. It's been really cool to carry that on.
That's really sweet. I feel like there's not a lot of consistent groups like that, like especially as people get older and your priorities change, kids, wife, jobs. I feel like that's something really commendable to stick to, like a routine like that.
It's tough. But man, this, like, we did this last one. It was on a spring fed river that was like 25 miles and we camped right in the middle. We had our biggest group ever and it was just so enjoyable. We get to explore, like, I harp on this a lot. Like, Florida is such an underrated adventure location. And I kind of have learned that through my bike trips. I've done 6 cross country bike rides now, like across the US that is. And I, like, every time, the places that I have the least expectation for, or I view as, like, the least adventure-y, end up being the best places, or the most memorable from the trip. Because my, I guess my expectations are so low, or just not there at all. It just blows it out of the water. And Florida's that way. Like, I've been all over the world doing adventures, visited a lot of different places. Hands down, Florida is, like, I am thrilled to be here and to explore things that, I mean, every time I go out, I just want more, see more. There's always further to go. And it's been neat. It's been really neat to kind of see that. And I think, you know, let's talk about expectations. I think that's why that first trip, that Alaska trip, was such a big deal. It was like, I just didn't know what to expect. And therefore, Paul and I were really intentional. I remember us talking about it a lot, just not having any expectations. Like, whatever happens is going to happen. We're just going to make sure we can keep going and make it home. And it was, like, absolutely my coming of age. I turned 21 on that trip. So it was like, I was like a boy when I left. I was a man when I got back. that's when I became a man, is what I tell people. So it's kind of funny. Not every person has that experience. And so with my kids, I have 2 boys right now, 4 and 2. I'm going to be very intentional around that time. Like, hey, y'all have to go do something that kind of symbolically transitions you into adulthood. I don't care what it is. You know, I don't care whatever you're into at the time. If you're into theater or film or sports or the outdoors, like, whatever it is, we're going to set something up that you make that transition. And now you know, nothing really changes. You'll just have a new experience and you're just kind of like, it's more symbolic than anything. Mine definitely, like, I grew up on that trip big time. Cause it's like, you know, I was a child. Like, I looked like a child. I would consider a 20-year-old these days a kid in a lot of ways. And, I just commend my parents for, well, they absolutely did not want me to go. Like, they were very clear about that. But I commend them for even, like, letting me go. I know it was scary for them.
Yeah, it's something you got to be really cognizant about being a parent, I feel like, is that boundary between, like, protecting and debilitating, you know, because a lot of the more dangerous activities or things we consider to be dangerous are when, like, all of that growth happens, especially earlier in your life. Like, I know a lot of the more dangerous things I did, whether it's like backpacking Europe or backpacking in the States, survival trips, those are the things that had the biggest impact on me. But if you looked at it as a stat sheet, those are definitely the more dangerous opportunities.
I think on the surface, yeah. But, you know, I think driving in a car is the most dangerous thing we do. And that's pretty, I mean, there's a good chance cars are dangerous and way safer to fly. And people your brain doesn't always go there. But, like, we live near the ocean. I take my kids paddleboarding and whatnot. We see a lot of sharks. And they're not big because, you know, I'm kind of afraid of the ocean, honestly. But we see big animals out there. And I'm like, and they get scared. Or we'll see gators. They're actually not too scared of gators, thankfully. But I'm like, no, this is nothing to worry about. Those things have no desire to get away from you. What I do want you to watch out for is when we're in this pasture, watch out for the bull, because the bull will charge you and trample you. But we just don't treat it the same way. But that's the danger to me, is kind of, it's not always the most obvious or what's been, you know, marketed as most dangerous. So, but you're definitely right. In those moments, those create those core memories for us.
Yeah, there's a statistic that Florida leads in shark attacks, but even with Florida being the most common, you are more likely to die from a vending machine falling on you than a shark attack.
They'll get you too. So I tell them, watch out for vending machines. And watch out for vending machines. Mostly because, you know, their snacks are like five times the price they should be. You know, it's funny. I actually tell my kids, this is horrible, but like we have the ice cream truck, speaking of that, go around the neighborhood, and I always say, oh, no. They're the music's on because they're out of ice cream. That's the only time. And then they'll see one that like doesn't have the music on. They're like, Dad, it has ice cream. And I'm like, it's going too fast.
Got like a year left until that you get called out on that one.
Yeah. It's slowly. I can tell.
It's a ticking time bomb.
Slowly, like, okay, that doesn't make any sense.
So I'm curious, you're saying you love Florida, but obviously you spent a lot of time out here in Colorado exploring the Rockies. Are there any areas here or adventures you did in Colorado that stick with you as being the highlight?
Oh, gosh. Yes, absolutely. I love Colorado, and it'll always have, you know, kind of a really special place where my wife and I really kind of laid the groundwork of our marriage and just kind of grew up together in a lot of ways. And I think the place that I always have wanted to go back to and never could spend enough time, and I spent a lot of time there, but never could, is the Sangre de Cristo Mountains down in southern Colorado. It's just kind of this curtain of mountains, one ridge of like 914ers. And that area was always just so wonderful. It was this weird mix of like, it almost had like, it felt like Montana. It was like the closest thing to Montana and Wyoming in Colorado to me, but almost with a little more desert. It's drier. It's near Great Sand Dunes National Park. That mountain range behind it is the Sangre de Cristos. And I always felt like it was kind of underrated, maybe underrated. There was way less people there. And so every time I'd go there, I'd have just an unbelievable wilderness experience. I'd go to this backpacking route or, you know, something I wanted to do out there. And I'd be like the only truck around for miles. And I just felt it was so open, so big country. And, I really liked it. And one of the reasons it's like that is probably because there's no ski resorts down there. Anytime I did any trips near ski resorts, there's a lot more infrastructure and a lot more accessibility, and you just inevitably have more people. But I really started gravitating towards that area. And so right before we moved back, I took my dog and we did a big trip through the Sangres together before heading out. And it was awesome. And it's weird too. I love, so there's this town, Crestone. It's like super hippie, there's like UFO watchers out there. And it's this weird mix of like Native American and kind of trippy, you know, I don't even know, just like weird people. And so I think the Florida man in me really liked that. I felt at home in that kind of quirkiness. And so that, I love that whole area. I still do.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And those mountains, they seem to pop up kind of out of nowhere, where a lot of Colorado, you kind of build up into these big mountain ranges. It feels like the Sangres is just like, you know, like the northern terminus is kind of Salida, and you just see this giant ridgeback running straight south. And it's just, you kind of just look at it and you think, what if I just popped up on top of that and I just stayed on the ridge the whole way down? And I actually... a guy you've had on your podcast before, I just was talking to Justin Simone, and the Long Ranger. He was talking about, he has a video dropping sometime soon about him getting in a gnarly storm on top of there. And that guy's been through a lot of storms. So for him to get shut down, I'm excited to see that video. That's all I'm going to say.
Justin is I mean, he's like probably, I'd say, knows that range better than anybody. Yeah. And has seen just so much. He's a true adventurer. Mm-hmm. I can talk about it, you know, but Justin is definitely a leader in this space and really cool guy. Really cool guy.
Yeah, it was
beautiful.
He was
a big inspiration to me while I was out there.
I had him here in the studio, and I had never met him before, and he came over and sure enough pulled up on his bike. He's like, "Yep, just biked here from Boulder." And I'm like, "That is so on brand. I'm in Morrison."
Oh, no way. No way. That's gosh, that's what, 35 miles or so.
It's a serious bike. Yeah, maybe 40
yeah,
miles.
I mean,
35.
It ain't like 2 miles away, you know. It's some time. Yeah, he that's what I was going to say. He doesn't have a car. He lives the life, man. His whole world revolves. I mean, he's climbed Long's Peak in like every month of the year, maybe every week of the year now. It's endless enthusiasm and endless energy from that guy. I could never keep up with that. I actually tried. He did this thing called Tour de 14ers where he biked to and climbed every 14er in the summer. And I actually attempted that back in 2017, and I got like a third of the way through and just couldn't keep going. I didn't have it in me. That was tough. That was a crazy experience. But he did it, and I was like, you know, there's no way I'm approaching that guy. He's a legend.
Yeah, he's built different, man. His demeanor, it's not just like the physical thing. Like, you can tell that his demeanor and his passion for what he's doing is what's leading the way. He's not just like, he's obviously a physical specimen, but it's not necessarily about that. When you're doing those super long range trips, a lot of it is what you have between the ears.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I got that sense from him too. That's awesome. I'm glad you connected with Justin. He's the real deal.
Yeah. Well, I heard him on your podcast and I was like, oh, I got to figure out, you know, I got to find out how to get a hold of this guy.
That's awesome to hear. That's awesome. I love that.
So it's kind of full circle there. Speaking of the podcast, this is, you know, part of the reason I have a podcast is because I want to talk to people selfishly that I want to talk to them about. And you have a unique perspective of being a podcaster that has really excelled. Like, there's so many podcasts out there that are very small and, you know, maybe they're comfortable staying small, or they don't pan out for whatever reason. What do you think is the defining factor that makes a podcast grow and blossom versus not?
Yeah, man, that's a great question. 'Cause that's a hard one to answer. I don't know. I'd say what's worked for me, and that's all I can speak to, is just being consistent. I think I'm listening to a book by Seth Godin, which is this marketing guru. What is it? Let me read the quote, if you don't mind. I wrote it down in my phone yesterday, but it's what I believed. I had just never had it put into words kind of this succinctly, but it's what I would say. He just said it better, and so I'll say what he said. It's persistent, consistent, and frequent stories delivered to an aligned audience will earn attention, trust, and action. So it's really those points of being consistent with releasing episodes, frequent enough to where people don't lose, you know, attention. I'd say once a week's a good model. You know, some podcasts are once a month. Heck, one of the biggest shows in the world, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, is like once or twice a year is how often he releases an episode. Then you get Joe Rogan, it's like every day. So there's like, you got to find what's sustainable for you. Yeah. If doing podcasts once a month is all you can do, just stick to that. If it's every single day, which I know podcasters that do that, if you can do it and you can sustain that for a long time, do it. But I think it's that consistency that really, really helps. You can't you just can't do anything if it's not consistent on a consistent basis. And that's worked well for me. Time and it just takes time. It's just like working out. You know, how do you see results is not one awesome workout. It's a lot of awesome workouts consistently over time. And then it just becomes like a war of attrition with people around you. Like there's so many shows getting started. It's ridiculous. So I think it's something, there's some amazing, just wild stats around podcasting. Like if you have more than 2 episodes, you're already better than like half the podcasts out there, because they get started, have 1 episode and it's done. So
yeah.
Out of the millions of shows that exist, there's probably a few 100,000 at the most that are actually shows and actually produce episodes consistently. I've seen shows in this space come and go throughout the years. And it's kind of like, you know, unfortunately, planting a tree. Like there's no fast way to grow a tree. You kind of have to plant it and then it's time, but you got to take care of it. You can, you know, like I did with my show, I bought a tree that was planted a few years ago. So I do have a little bit of a leg up there, but there's plenty of shows that pop on, you know, they come on into the game and they're massively successful because there's a niche that they're fulfilling that wasn't before. But really it is that consistency. It is the frequency. And it is finding that aligned audience. So there's a lot of shows that interview adventurers. I'd say what's different about mine is we don't talk about gear, and we don't talk about it in a way that's just inspiration. We try to just make it really relatable.
Yeah.
And make sure that it's interesting no matter what it's about and who you talk to. But, you know, the show's too broad to focus on one type of sport. So whether you're a true thru hiker or you like to base jump, if you like good stories and you like hearing people's stories about what makes them tick and why they love what they do and all that, I think they would enjoy the show. It's not for everybody, you know, and nor should it be. If you try to make a show for everybody, you make it for nobody.
Right. Yeah, man, I think you do all that really well, and it's definitely a podcast that if there was, you know, a list of podcasts that I look up to and aspire to be like, I would definitely put the Adventure Sports Podcast on there. So, yeah, congratulations on
that's really humbling. It's I don't even believe people listen to it. Like you tell me this, I'm like, oh yeah. I actually, it isn't just because to me, sometimes you talk to these people and you're like, just talking to them was enough. Like that's a satisfying, I'm satisfied. That was so cool being able to talk to this person. And then you're like, oh yeah, it actually gets put out in the world and other people hear it too. And sometimes I honestly forget that, like, does anyone actually listen? And the numbers on the screen say yes, but it's like, I know my mom doesn't listen. I know my wife doesn't listen. It's like the people around me don't. So it's weird. You know what I mean? So that means the world, Ryan, that you said that. That's awesome.
It is a funny thing. And it kind of comes full circle to Chris, who was talking to me and introduced me to your podcast. He was saying, you know, how many people listen per episode? And I said a number and I was like, yeah, we're, you know, just a small podcast. And he's like, but hold on a second. Now imagine you're having that conversation and those people are in the room. He's like, visualize that many people listening to this conversation that you're having, and now it feels a lot crazier.
Dude, that is absolutely true. Like when I go on these trips and there's 30 people on these trips, I'm like, oh my God, 30 people decided to dedicate their time to come up and show up and do this. It's amazing. 30 people that listen to a podcast, that feels like nothing. But if you put 30 people in a room, like you said, it's like, this is a real community. This is actually human beings in here that are doing this. And to me, you know, you can get a million people to look at it, you know, a TikTok that's 5 seconds. That's not a relationship. When someone commits to an hour long, you know, interview or conversation, that's like a chunk of their day, you know, that's a chunk of their time. And people that do that consistently, that's that's huge. That's a relationship you have with them now. So I love this world of podcasts, and I think it's the only way you and I would even have a relationship thousands of miles apart right now is through this medium called podcasting. It's really cool. I think it's so crazy.
It kind of blows me back every time I think about it. I'm like, oh yeah, I have a podcast and I talk to people that I've never met before. That's kind of cool.
And they like pour their hearts out to you.
Right.
As a stranger.
Right. Yeah.
What else? And it's like therapy session in the pub. Yeah, it's crazy. It is a crazy format, but there's a lot of good things going on.
It reinstills a lot of hope in humankind though. You know, you're like, oh, I can just like have a great conversation with somebody that I've never met before. And they're just nice and, you know, polite and have a lot of really cool stories and have gone through shit and also had really great high moments in their life, just like me. And, you know, it's a really cool thing to connect on.
Yep. Absolutely. And, oh man, I'm looking, yeah, you just had Justin on. This is wow. To be following up Justin is a huge honor. Or not, I don't know when this comes out, but just knowing that he was one of the episodes, he's the real deal, man. And I'm looking through your guests. You've had some huge names on already. So congrats. And I will give you, I don't know if you'll put this, but dude, anyone you want to talk to, just reach out. Like you'd be blown away the amount of people that you just think are inaccessible that will say yes to a podcast. I've learned over the years, I'm like, holy crap, this huge celebrity says, yeah, I'll be on your show. Send me the link. And so if you just make it easy for them to sign up and to get what they need to be on, it's going to blow your mind, the people you can have on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's funny. Some of the people I've actually had on are involved in the Athletic Brewing world as well. And so I thought that was another interesting connection, because it's kind of this non-alcoholic niche beer that, you know, maybe not everyone else would know about, but in like the athletics and endurance sports world, it's a really, really big thing. And so once I saw him, I'm like, oh, he also works for Athletic Brewing. What another crazy, weird connection.
And that all came from this podcast.
Yeah. What's the lead adventurer mean? I saw that on your title, like lead adventurer.
Oh yeah, that's I'm the lead adventurer at Athletic Brewing. That basically means I answer tons of emails. No, I'm just kidding. It's like, you know, we're already a brewery that doesn't make alcohol. We make non-alcoholic craft beer. And so we're already thinking out of the box. So kind of my role there is to just, in our marketing and in whatnot, to just be willing to just take those big risks. So some of the things we've done is we've biked from one of our breweries to the other, Connecticut to San Diego, so coast to coast. We have an ambassador program with like 1,500 really passionate, enthusiastic fan, you know, brand ambassadors. I help manage that program. I host our podcast where we talk to other people that are living without compromise. Like we say we brew non-alcoholic beer without compromise, but this show is about like who else in our community is doing really cool things kind of against the grain and out of the box. So there's like a lot of random little things I do, but it's really I work in marketing for them and just kind of help bring this brand called Athletic Brewing to the world. And it's working. It's a lot of fun.
Sweet. Well, before we hop off here, I just want to ask, are there any upcoming, it could be a podcast, it could be a trip, is there anything you're like looking forward to that's on the docket?
Yeah, I had a big one last week, Bear Grylls. That was a huge, just making sure that happened, you know, like, because that was in person. Out of the 500-600 podcast interviews I've done now, I've probably only done like 5 in person. So wow. Most of them are like this, or over the phone and stuff. So very rare. So having it in person and having it such a big name was a really special experience. But coming up, we've got another one of our paddle trips in July, in one of the springs here in Florida, which will be just awesome. I love these trips. They're so fun. And then summer's coming up. It's really hot here, so maybe try to get out in your area a little more when it's, you know, nice and cool and nice in the mountains. A couple birthdays for my kids and just kind of some family life. I think my dad's at my house right now, so I'm going to go see him in a little bit. And we'll see. I don't know. I'm at a stage where I'm not planning too much, but can do, you know, anything I want. So it's kind of enjoying a little bit slower pace right now with a young family.
Very cool. Well, if you wander out west.
Yeah. What's that?
I said, if you wander out west, let me know, man. I'll be here throughout the summer, just putting around in the woods and hanging out.
Good. Take advantage of it. Enjoy, every moment you can out there. It doesn't need to be big moments, big crazy adventures to get what you need out of nature and out of adventure. It really can be an afternoon. I would always neglect, this is just a word of warning, because I lived near Golden, and I don't know if you know Green Mountain right there.
Yeah.
That was like my little escape every chance I got. But there would be like a week, I'd go a week or two without going up there and hiking up to the summit or biking up there. And every time I'd go to take that hour or whatever it was to do that, I would never regret it, and it would always be way better than I expected. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just really easy as, you know, professionals with jobs or just as adults, it's easy to like think, oh, that little time in nature is not going to be enough to do anything mm-hmm. with. You know, it's almost like having one bite of a really good meal. Like it's just enough to make you mad, you know? But no, it really can get you through. It can calm you down. It can relieve that stress. It can really scratch that itch until, you know, you do have another big trip. And I know with places like Colorado where there's seasons, it can be a long wait before you get that fix you're looking for. So do those little things. Like even Bear Grylls said that. He said, go hug a tree. Like that was one of the most badass dudes in our generation saying, like, it's that those little steps really can help fulfill your soul. And so just a word for anyone out there who says, I got to through hike the AT, or I've got to, you know, whatever big adventure I want to do. If that's years away, don't neglect those small moments you can get out there, even in your own backyard, literally in your backyard. If you can just lay in the grass, like it, those things matter. But anyway, sure, man. That's all I got to say.
No, that's beautiful. Last question, again, selfishly. I'm running section 5 to section 1 of the Colorado Trail this weekend, 70 miles. What is one piece? And I'm doing it unsupported with a friend. We did it to raise money for this wildlife or this wild children's group in California. What is one piece of advice, being as someone that spent some time on the CT, that you would give us for an unsupported CT run?
Section 5. You're going section Kenosha, 5 to section 1?
From Kenosha Pass to Waterton Canyon.
Okay, yeah. So go that way, because a lot of it will be downhill.
Yep.
And it's it was a lot... Forgive me, I did it years ago. It was a lot more open during that section than I realized, from like burns. So sunscreen, yeah. Hydration, and it was drier. So I don't know what the spring's been like as far as like water availability, whatnot, but it was way more exposure and the sun exposure, that is, and way hotter or drier than I expected.
Yeah. So
maybe just prepare for that. Other parts of it were just, you know, much more covered and in the lower elevation, even though that's lower elevation compared to other parts. I just remember a lot of it being open, kind of sandy too. So
yeah,
just be ready for that.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out, and yeah, thank you. I'll keep you updated, or I'll let you know how it goes. Hopefully everything goes smoothly, but yeah, I just appreciate you coming on and chatting with me.
So hopefully not, then you'll have some stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 70 miles, there's plenty of time for some kind of story to amount.
Yes, there's plenty. Stay safe. But all right, Ryan, thanks so much. I'm excited to dive into who the wild things are. I love the name, by the way, and the artwork looks awesome.
I appreciate that. All right, man. Well, until next time, and good luck on all your future adventures.
Thank you. You too. All right. See ya.
Later, man.